Bonjour.
Ni hao. ¿Cómo estás? Welcome to Champagne Strategy. Listen to this episode if you dare, but you've been warned, there's no going back.
Hi everyone, James here, and you're listening to a special live edition of the Own the Moment podcast, recorded live from within Seven House at Sydney's South by Southwest Festival in late October of this year. The On The Moment podcast is brought to you by Como Technologies, a self-service, complete customer engagement platform that helps you cut through the noise to truly connect with your customers and retain and grow those connections over time. With Como, you can build and deploy new campaigns, activations, promotions, and programs in days, not months, and our software is used by some of the world's biggest consumer brands, from Heineken to Budget, Goodman Fielder, Foxtel, JLL, Williams Racing, and McDonald's. Learn more at como.tech. Let's get straight into it. Welcome, everybody, to this special live edition of the On The Moment podcast. It's my great pleasure today to welcome John James. John is the host of the Champagne Strategy podcast, a must listen if you're in marketing, has years of experience in digital and growth marketing across Australia and Silicon Valley. And whether I agree or disagree with him on a specific topic always gets me thinking. I'd just like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land that we meet on today, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. John, we're here today to talk about the idea of brand campaigns and explore some of the confusion in the industry as to what is a brand campaign. Maybe we'll start there. You've been writing this extensive article series online over the last few weeks on what actually a brand campaign is. Tell me, how did you sort of stumble across this topic and what have you learned?
Well, this really came from some clients that I deal with. So I advise executives on their growth strategy mostly. And what kept coming up is they were being sold brand campaigns by performance agencies, which I found a bit odd, considering most people think there's a binary choice between brand and performance. So then I was like, okay, well, what exactly is a brand campaign? And I started to ask a couple of people that are in my network, and I got five very different answers. And then I thought, okay, let's tweet something inflammatory on Twitter and just see what happens. And it sort of blew up. And
what was the tweet? Can you remember?
Okay, it said, this is being facetious, but I said brand campaigns are a scam. You know, that I've got the data and it shows that, you know, brand campaigns are the biggest scam in the world. Convince me otherwise or something like that. And I had a very polarized comment section. There was a couple of people from tech, no surprise there, who were like, yeah, that's completely true. You know, this is my experience, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I had a lot of other people go, no, you're an idiot. And I'd heard all these arguments before, but I just wanted to see what people's thinking process here was. So then I started to probe a bit, go, like, what is a brand campaign? And everybody avoided the answer. So I was like, okay, hang on here. And then I thought to myself, actually, yeah, what is it? I don't know either. So then I sort of crowdsourced some of the comments and probed a bit heavier and then kind of created a table of direct response, performance campaign, what do you want to call them, on one side, and then brand on the other. Mm. And it's kind of like a strategic method of dividing a very complex topic and just seeing where the middle ground is here and where the extremes are. And that was really cool. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, that's pretty much accurate. And I checked with a couple of people. And I thought, you know, we really need a definition here. And then someone said in the comments, think different. Brand campaigns work because they think different. And I was like, I know that campaign really well. So I looked at their financials and their market cap, you know, the revenue and all that kind of thing, and did quite a big analysis and then wrote a piece about it. Anyway, that piece turned into six. And sort of I'm dripping them out every week. So that's the story.
Great. I saw this quote that you engaged with online the other day, and it was, advertising used to be about big ideas, creating desire, building aspirational worlds. Now it's mostly about optimization, efficiency, and arbitrage. A lot of the industry is closer to finance than it is to creative at this point, but we're loath to admit it. Is that wrong or is that right?
I think it's both. For me, creativity has to be commercially creative. So we're in business. Like, we're not just... we're often spending someone else's money, the company money, not ours. Very different with some of the clients that I deal with, which is actually their money. So they take a very different view about these things. But creativity that's unrestrained, that's undisciplined, can be really creative, but it can't be always commercially viable. So I think there has to be some sort of discipline or structure around that. And that's what strategy ultimately provides. So I think that's symptomatic of the loss of strategic thinking, which is the whole point of writing this series, giving people ammo going, actually, just before you take someone's word for it, why don't you just think about it first? And what is your objective? Do you start with a channel or do you start with an objective? And a lot of people get this order around the wrong way. And I think that's why it's kind of both right and wrong at the same time. I think there has been a transition with digital media that is a bit less, some of the mediums are a bit less rich. And I think you lose a bit that other channels provide. And And I find people come from a digital camp or they come from some of the traditional agency. And I think I've come from all three worlds. Started in large advertising agencies, very traditional media, like digital was very new. Then I was like in digital agencies, and then I sort of went to growth. Very different ways of looking at the same problem. How do we grow a company? How do we, you know, increase firm value or commercial value? So I think that's why maybe people are enjoying the very kind of triple-sided perspective of how this all works. Mm.
So you said there that you feel like we've lost some of that strategic element. Why do you think that is? And do we know that's the case or...?
That's a complex answer. Yeah, I mean, there are some indicative things. I think we've been relying on vendors to do that thinking for us a lot. I think strategy should always be internal, maybe complemented with external people, but a process that's really championed internally. Otherwise, you can suffer from buying into buzzwords, buying into things that aren't always true, which, you know, will work politically, but it isn't always good for the company's performance. So I think it's that outsourced vendoring. I mean, we've outsourced pretty much every function in businesses now and have a very sort of lean team that's basically just glorified coordinators often. So I think we've just lost that naturally through that outsourcing process.
Mm. So brand campaigns, and I agree, Think Different comes to mind, something like Just Do It. Do they work and how do we know that they work?
That's a long answer. Yes, but there's a time and a place. And I was talking to another CMO just before this who worked on that campaign. She lives in Australia now, but
I think we can mention Susan Coghill from Tourism Australia. She'll be on.
She is really good. Very interesting conversation. And yeah, she hand-delivered this package in October, which is very much around the same time. Anyway, there were certain circumstances, and I don't want to spoil part five, which goes through Think Different in detail, but there were very certain circumstances that were affecting Apple at the time, which a lot of people don't know. And that's why I went into detail about there was some political problems there with Steve's return. There was they were facing bankruptcy too. Mm. So this is a campaign designed to assure the whole world that Apple is here, it's going to be here for the future, and this is our long-term vision. And that was exactly what was needed at the time. Now, should you be doing that if you've got to increase earnings by 20% next month or whatever it is? Like, that's a very different objective. So I'm just saying there's a time and a place for all these types of campaigns, but it starts with your objective. Mm. And that's why that campaign was quite good for Apple at the time.
Mm. I know you're a big proponent of Ehrenberg Bass and sort of marketing science. How can brands then, based on that marketing science, run effective brand campaigns? And what does an effective brand campaign look like to you?
Yeah,
to marketing science, maybe.
I saw this study. I think Kuhn Pauls posted it. It was like they did a study about what is effectiveness in marketing. And there's like 170 different metrics. So the short answer to that question is that effectiveness can mean anything for different companies at different stages. And you have to be really wary about that. And there's a lot of trade-offs. So if you optimize for one metric, you're foregoing maybe a metric that's tied to that, but a bit different. So I think you need to have a holistic perspective around effectiveness for that to be a good starting point for your campaign.
Yeah. What are the right metrics?
Look, I mean, I deal with commercial value. It's a bit different to maybe some of the political benefits. But the way I would tackle this, and I was just talking to Susan about this, is that I would divide into three groups of metrics. And one is the primary effect from your campaign, like what is the primary thing you want to achieve? And then I would have secondary effects that maybe branch off that primary goal. And then again, another layer of tertiary effects. And by doing that, you can sell a longer, more complex outcome from your campaign to the people who are financing it, because they want to know, will it reach this metric? But you're like, well, we'll do that, but it'll also do this. And if it does that, then it does that. And that's one big part of strategy when you're doing your planning around objectives, key results, that kind of thing.
I want to talk about this idea you've posted about online called the marketing initiative conundrum. Talk to me about the conundrum.
Well, yeah, that's a good lead on. So there are certain things that are good for the company and there are certain things that are good for marketers, certain things that are good for maybe your vendors. And what I found is that what makes you look good isn't always the thing that makes the company perform. And it's about finding that balance. You need a bit of both. You need a bit of something that you can attach to, you can sell internally, that makes you look pretty good and you know, you want to further your career, I understand that. But also make sure that's a bit of the other side as well. And I think it's about finding that perfect mix. Now, what the matrix does is it divides different marketing initiatives, and there's might be 10 there, into different quadrants. And I'm just trying to explain to people that some things that are maybe not sexy, maybe a bit boring, you know, market research, talking to customers, really important. Won't win you many political favors though. Mm. And other things are the opposite. And it's just about maybe finding a balance when I do media planning about making sure you got all those sort of things covered as much as you can. Mm.
How did we sort of land here in your view? Why are some things politically more viable than others?
The roles now, it's like what the what's the organization rewards, I would say, and what it doesn't reward. And that starts at the top. So if you don't understand what marketing is, you're going to get sold things that look good and you're going to buy into them. And then you're going to get annoyed at the marketer why that thing didn't work when all along you're the one who approved it. So like, I think it starts with, that's what this piece is about, educating the people that are then approving these decisions on behalf of the marketer at a board level.
You've talked a lot about availability. Mm-hmm. As opposed to awareness. Talk more about availability and how can brands impart or focus on availability to drive better commercial outcomes rather than just say awareness?
Yeah, so I mean, if you read, I'm not a huge fan of all of his work, but Peter Thiel makes a good point around distribution being exclusive in a way that if you have good distribution, you can sell a product regardless of everything else in the mix. So it's not always the most interesting, but this is the old school business development. Just think of any tradie, right? Actually, medicine is probably the best example. In Australia, you're not allowed to, it's been relaxed, but you're not allowed to advertise. There's very strict controls around advertising. So if you're a specialist or a consultant, for example, medical consultant, the way you would get business is you'd go to your GPs and take them out for lunch or dinner or something. That is their referral distribution network, right? Because you're not allowed to advertise. So tradies are the same. You partner up with another tradie that is complementary to yours and you create this like network effect that can funnel business into you with zero advertising, right? Mm. What's better though is if you combine all these P's together and you add advertising on top of that to make up for maybe some of the deficiencies in your strategy. And I think that's what maybe over the years, the marketing's branched off into just comms, just advertising. And I think you need to bring it back as part of a bigger whole. And be aware of the trade-offs too.
Right. It's funny. One of the questions I ask on this show all the time is, and I will ask you later, is what's the most underrated trend in marketing? And so many people speak about those fundamentals. Why do you think so many people tell me that it's still underrated to focus on the fundamentals of, I mean, the four Ps, for example?
Because they work. I mean, okay, but
I guess if it's underrated, there's an inference there that they're sort of ignored.
Yes, yeah. Okay. So the reason they're ignored is because one of those P's gets a lot more attention. People talk about it more. But
which one is that?
The promotional P, of course. But even within promotions, more the visual aspect of things. So it comes down to this, I call it a visibility or tangibility bias. So the things that we can see that are most obvious to us, we tend to invest most of our resources in because it's what you can see. But what's hidden underneath that iceberg is more powerful things. And I think that needs to get talked more about. But also the four Ps form a sort of synergistic effect between them. So it's a complex system. And they each play into one another. So you can't, for example, you know, luxury good, you put that in a Kmart store at a low price, it's not going to really work, right? So these all need to complement one another. And I think that's also what gets lost when these Ps break away from the bigger picture. And then you know, they kind of use as a scapegoat for why things didn't work. I'm like, well, because you haven't connected.
What do you mean by that?
Well, so if I'm an executive, for example, and I'm in a very competitive category and maybe it's in decline, I'm going to put these bigger bets on bigger campaigns and ad campaigns and then blame the market or why it didn't work instead of looking more broadly at the entire business growth cycle. And that's where the growth method in Silicon Valley is really important because it looks at everything in terms of a loop feeding back into one another rather than
as opposed to
department over here, department over there, no shared goals, politics in between, nothing gets done.
Right. I wanted to ask you about digital. Obviously, you mentioned yourself, you've spent many years in digital and growth. Mm-hmm. One of the things we've been talking about and we'll talk about in these sessions this week is, you know, the power of the mainstream and mass cultural events. And I guess this meme that, you know, it's all about digital, TV's dying, all of those sorts of memes. Tell me, what's your take on digital and how much of the ad market it's eaten over the last 10 years and where are we at now?
So I mean, in general, you've probably all seen it, probably observed it. The yields from a lot of digital media are dying. So what used to be cheap and effective, now we don't know how to optimize it because we're losing the feedback loop of privacy around attribution. So that's a massive problem that's creating this like inflation, the cost of a lot of these mediums. And I think other mediums are underrepresented and underappreciated because they're old. So, you know, we have this kind of fashion cycle in business. You know, you see the same, if you're old enough, you see the same thing coming back, just called something different.
What do you mean? Like, can an example?
Like, no one uses the word synergy anymore. It's a growth loop, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, oh, it's not, a growth loop started in anyway, it's a long story, but it started in airplane testing, actually. But anyway, so I think, you know, we have cycles, and I think old mediums are traditional now. We underinvest in, and the yields can be still there. Maybe they're not growing, but they can be very effective if you make a good decision. And I actually had this example recently. So startup just down here, can't mention the name. They're targeting boomers or 65 plus, people looking to retire, basically. And they had made a deal to invest in a brand campaign. And this is where this comes from. Mm. But it was with a digital agency, which, you know, can work out. But what happened is that they put all their money into broad targeted Facebook advertising with a pretty weak creative that just looked like any other ad that you'd flick past. And they spent a lot of money on this, in the 90% of the budget, and then it hasn't done anything. And I was like, well, you've got all these people sitting at home watching TV. You know, if I was targeting those people, I'd be at the RSLs doing activation events, for example. This is a very high friction financial product, right? So I'd be doing, like, you know, these partnership sort of events. I'd complement that with some, maybe some TV ads. You'll see the Retirement Village ads on TV, right? I'd be doing some letter drops and things like that. Like, not sexy kind of stuff, not digital, but effective. And I mean, you can only recommend so many things before they ignore you. And they went down this other road, and it ended badly. Now, I think the same is true maybe on the other side as well. And that's why I'm saying you should be a bit more agnostic about how these channels are chosen, and sort of just think through, like, who is your target market, and what are they consuming? Rather than, I think we should start with ABC channel and go from there and do some testing and figure out if it works or not. Like, it, you know, you can make 5 phone calls with your target market and figure out very quickly which channels you should be investing in.
That's, yeah, that's really, really interesting. I want to ask you some quick fire questions. What's your favorite marketing campaign of all time?
It would be the Google campaign. Google Pay, and it's not officially an advertising campaign, but Google Pay... Is it $18 or $20 billion a year to Apple for default access to, so in Safari, so the default homepage can be Google. $20 billion a year is one of the biggest campaigns in the world. So that is a distribution play and an advertising campaign almost in
I feel like that's a very John James answer, like not a marketing campaign, but...
But the second one, I would, okay, I know this is cliche, but probably the Think Different campaign. Right. As much as I'm analyzing and making sure people like make a better decision about this campaign before they know the facts, it is actually interesting in a number of ways when I did the research. So anyway.
Can talk more about Think Different if you can.
Sure. I mean, I don't want to ruin the surprise, but Steve Jobs left through a board sort of disagreement in 80, just after that 1984 campaign. And then he started his own two companies, Pixar, with Google, George Lucas, who you probably know from Star Wars, and also he started Next Computers. Both became billion-dollar companies, multi-billion-dollar companies. Apple then were basically in not a good place. They, for the next 10 years after the Macintosh came out, had this string, that had this product line, which is crazy. Anyway, failing really badly. IBM and Microsoft are coming up and threatening, you know, their dominance in the personal computing market. And then Steve basically gets brought back in only through an acquisition of Next Computers.
Right.
Because their operating system was pretty terrible, Apple's at the time. So they basically bought Next and by virtue Steve back into the organization for their software, right? And then one of the first things he does, and this is interesting, Steve cuts their whole product line. He gets rid of 90-something percent of all their products and focuses on just a couple. He then creates this campaign that we all know. And then the effect that campaign had was exactly what the company needed, and it worked in multi-dimensions. And there's a lot of other things that went on, but that's why I think it's one of the most effective campaigns, because the whole company was about to collapse. The share price was terrible. They're about to go bankrupt.
I have to ask you an unplanned question. What do you think makes the Apple brand so special?
Okay. It's a product ecosystem effects. So they have a suite of products that all play into one another. Again, talk about network effects. And they have switching barriers, you know, cords, dongles. Have you ever switched from, you know, non-Apple to Apple and back again? It's a nightmare, right? But if you ever create another Apple device, it's very seamless, you know? Oh, that one just gets transferred.
Getting a new phone, for example.
Easy, easy. So they're really good with that sort of that friction,
right?
Either inserting friction intentionally around switching or reducing friction when you get a new product. So I think that is underrepresented, and that's why it's so strong.
And I guess the It Just Works meme, which
it's,
I mean,
true.
Until recently has been very true.
Yeah, and I think their advertising really, if you look deeper below behind the visuals, a lot of it is around cultural relevance. I don't want to sort of parrot someone else here, but, you know, simplicity of technology making your life easier.
Right.
And that has, there's been a theme that's always been touted since Steve Jobs' early days all the way through. So there's simplicity even in the way their ads are created. So they're not too busy. Maybe lately it's got a bit more. A bit different. I'm not a huge fan.
There's something around, I guess, like, you know, status.
And I think simplicity of message, I think we try to communicate too much. And I think what they do is they spend a lot of time making it as simple as possible so that we get the message. There's this famous thing where Johnny Ives, Steve Jobs is in a boardroom table and Steve goes, oh, we need to include this and this and this headline, that headline, all in the same ad. So Johnny Ives scrunches up all the bits of paper, five bits of paper, and throws them all at once to Steve and he can't catch any of them. And then Steve goes, oh, yeah, I get your point. And they went with one message instead of five. So I think that's really key. That's really hard. That requires, trade-offs and ignoring certain things and figuring out exactly where the opportunity in the market is and saying that in the fewest amount of words you can.
Right. All right, so you can't say Apple, but what's the best brand in the world right now?
Ooh, best brand. My favorite brand?
Or your favorite.
There's a zip brand in Japan called PKK, and nobody talks about this. They make zips for all your clothes.
What do you mean, like replacement zips?
No, the sort of brass zippers. They make premium style brass zippers. If you go to any, you know, good quality clothing, they'll have a PKK on it. So that's, they make zips.
And how
I think
big
it's hilarious.
How big is the business?
Huge. Wow. $multi-billion. And yeah, nobody knows about them. But if you go through your wardrobe, you'll see, look at the zip brand, and you'll probably see PKK on there.
Very cool. You learn something every day. Most overrated trend in marketing right now?
Oh, overrated. Maybe digital for digital's sake. I think.
Elaborate.
Like I say, like, where's your starting point with your decision making? And I think people just go for buzzwords, go for something they're familiar with instead of thinking, again, strategically, why am I doing this? For who? What effect are we trying to get? And I think there's a lot of social cachet in appearing techie. Right. And, we're at a tech festival and I work in tech. And sure, there is. But it should be, yeah, like maybe just think about some of the more traditional ways of getting your product to market and marketing that are maybe unrepresented.
And I liked your example of the flyers in the.
Yeah, direct mail.
Yeah. It feels like. Yeah.
So there's a gym down here called Locker Room. Do you know where it is? Just down here, Circular Quay. They did a really good campaign through direct mail, through all the finance CEO bros down that end of the city. And they sent them one boxing glove in direct mail. It was registered post, hand-delivered via courier, giving them one boxing glove, like CEOs, which are horrendously hard to get a hold of. I know because I target them. And they gave them one boxing glove and it said, to get the other glove, come down here for a boxing session. That was their whole business model based on direct mail. So there you go.
What are the biggest lies that marketers tell themselves?
I probably shouldn't say this, but like the promotional P is the most powerful. I think it is if you use it in conjunction with the other P's. And that's very critical. So I wouldn't start always there. I start with a combination of brand and product elements that I combine to call, and pricing and position to call the offering. And that's the thing that you're actually selling. You then need to put that into a messaging strategy, like how are we going to communicate what we're selling? And then you talk about what channels that you want to distribute that through, both your distribution network and both through media. I think a lot of people start right at the end instead of starting there. And then they wonder why it doesn't work.
I want to do a TikTok ad or a TV ad.
Right. I heard TikTok's big. Let's go into TikTok. I'm like, okay, why is your target market there? Is that the right medium for you? Yeah, there's a lot of questions around that. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't.
So. Right. All right. So the opposite of overrated then. What's the most underrated trend in marketing right now?
Old school channels.
Sorry?
Old school channels. I just mentioned direct mail. Maybe, I wouldn't call it old school, but like TV gets underrepresented, I think, especially in... I think especially...
That wasn't planned, I promise.
Especially in tech. If you go around the city, you'll see Canva does a lot of outdoor ads in all the major cities. Maybe not so much in Sydney, but other ones, like they're everywhere. I saw on the hoarding of the plane coming in today, binge ads on the, you know, the ramp extension out to your, what do you call that thing? The gangway? You know, out to your aircraft, on the side hoardings was, you know, binge. So a tech company using outdoor, you know, in a pretty grubby place, an airport apron.
And
I think that was interesting, but they bought out the whole airport. Like every single one was binge, so I noticed it.
I noticed it as well yesterday when I came in.
Very bright. So they're using that contrast, white with very colors. So I think, you know, maybe just have a think about what are the channels that are maybe underappreciated, that aren't sexy, that you could play around with. And I think that's...
I think radio comes to mind there as well. It's still... I saw the numbers recently on Australian radio and it's like unfathomable how big it still is. Podcasts, of course. Before we get to Q&A, who should I have on the show next? Who is someone that I should be speaking to learn more?
Susan's coming on Friday, so I'd say her.
Be here on Friday, everyone.
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Like in Australia or...?
We're global, so.
Oh, global. Okay. Ross Sargent, I interviewed him. He worked for Asahi as the head of media. Mm. And he was really interesting.
You say Asahi?
Yeah, Asahi Group. Yeah. So they own most of the beers in Australia. Mm. But they're a global organization. He's just moved to Allwyn, I think it's called, which is the biggest. They spend over $1 billion a year in advertising. So they're basically Europe's biggest advertiser.
Wow.
And we talk a lot. And he was the one who came out very early against Peter Thiel and Benet's 60-40 rule and said like...
What's the 60-40 rule, sorry?
We should be spending 60% in this and 40% short-term, long-term kind of thing, right? And basically he had data to prove otherwise and he said it's not always that. And most people assume that it's kind of true but also inaccurate to allocate percentages, right? And anyway, he's very interesting because he's worked in multiple countries with lots of media spend and he's doing a big sort of renewal thing right now with globally.
Great. You'll have to introduce me. John, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Own the Moment podcast.